Welcome to Casterbrus. I'm Christian Corley. Welcome to another of our weekly editions in which I go through the latest news and releases of television, film, book, music that I'm kind of interested in. And by definition of the fact that you're listening means that you're possibly interested in as well. Before we crack on with lots of news, and there is loads of stuff, including some stuff from Gareth Cavanagh, I just want to let you all know that the interview with Tom Selinski concerning his Red Dwarf book, Red Dwarf, Discovering the TV Series, Volume 1, 1988 to 1993, that podcast is now live on Patreon. For the full version, sign up to our free Patreon. If you just want the standard 30-minute option, that is now out on Spotify. We're also giving away a copy of this book to our Patreon subscribers, free subscribers or paid, doesn't matter, you are in the draw for this. So if you want to be in with a chance of winning the book, it is a great collection of information, very similar to some of those old Doctor Who books that we used to get back in the day, those Doctor Who reference books. This volume is around 160 pages plus index, so, and it's completely unofficial as well, so Tom isn't beholden to any of the production team or the production companies or the BBC. It's an honest collection of opinions and facts, so that is available in our giveaway through our Patreon, which is at patreon.com/Casterbrus. Gods and Monsters Phase 2 from Cutaway Comics is now funding on Indiegogo. This is Gareth Cavanagh's brainchild, the sort of Doctorless universe and all that sort of thing. The first collection of these things was called Phase 1 and was a collection of books. These are comic books, graphic novels, Sutek, Omega and Forstein. We're now up to Phase 2. That's what's currently funding. And this features the titles Losco of the Antonine, Iris Wildtime, and Drax. So this is Phase 2 of the series. Now, this is funding, as I say, there's four brand new stories featuring Drax, Eldrad, Losco, and Iris Wildtime. Phase 2 is launching with a prestige 76-page graphic novel featuring Cockney Wheeler Dealer Drax from The Armageddon Factor. Continuing the story directly from Eldrad Must Live, which is a previous one-shot from Cutaway Comics. It's already hit its goal with 15 days left. So it's reached 114% of the targeted goal. So this is going into production regardless, but you have the opportunity to go and put your pledge for a digital version or a physical copy with the value-added material. I would say, first of all, the Iris Wildtime character, as voiced by Katie Manning, has appeared in a trailer, which we're going to play now.
Hey, look, lovies, it's Iris Wildtime here. Do you know, I've just borrowed this quantum transmitter so I can get a message out to all known and unknown realities. You see, lovies, ancient and powerful gods have gone to war. A feral princess has gone missing. Ooh, and rumour has it, the great and powerful Omega has found a way back into our universe. Now it's up to us to make sense of this cosmic chaos. At least it will be once we've got out of a few paradoxes, predicaments and, otherwise precarious scrapes of our own.
Stolen the quantum transmitter! Got her!
We need your help. Oh, it takes a lot to bring gods and monsters and fabulous time travellers like myself together. So, if you can just chuck us a couple of quid, we might just be able to stop an all-powerful evil from buggering up all of reality. Phew. Oh, made it. Oh, he thought, where was I? Oh, yes. Now, if that's not enough, we'll also reward you with some brilliant new comic books, jam-packed with thrilling stories and, oh, some fantastic bonus discs, stuffed with extra features, including exclusive audio commentaries. So, come on, my lovies, up on board. Ding, ding, next stop, adventure.
And it's probably worth just harking back to our chat with Gareth Cavanagh earlier this year, just to tell us a little bit more about Gods and Monsters Phase 2.
Two more comics, so that is Drax. That's a Drax two-parter, so that's Bob Baker's character from... he's like a kind of mechanic, not a very good Time Lord, from the Armageddon Factor. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
By Ian Winston, Steve B. Scott. So that's great. So we've got Drax in 70s London, but also in 70s LA. So we thought, well, why does it always have to be grungy London? And so we've got that coming. We've got Iris Wildtime. That's complete. That's got comics complete. That's Sean Mason and Libby on the art. So they're brilliant. Who's mostly known as T Dalek online. She's been brilliant. So that's done, complete. And then there's Losco. He's the last of the new characters we're bringing in. That's Steve Gallagher of Warriors Gate fame, has written that. And this character is pulled out of the opening chapter of his target novelisation of Warriors Gate, which was obviously more expansive and much bigger. And so this is a brand new character who Steve wrote, in 1980. During the ITV strike, but he's got a big part to play. So that's coming as well.
So that's Gods and Monsters Phase 2. Link to that on Indiegogo is in the show notes. Now, something which I'm a little bit ill at ease about is the news that Michael Parkinson is being resurrected. The veteran journalist, broadcaster and seasoned interviewer passed away at 88 in 2023. But now, thanks, I suppose it's one way of putting it, to Jamie Anderson, Mike Parkinson, and the Michael Parkinson estate, he is being audibly resurrected as an AI presenter of a new celebrity interview podcast later this year. This is an 8-part unscripted series called Virtually Parkinson. I'm not making this up, this is real. Which will allow new guests to be questioned in Parkinson's famous relaxed style, with the full backing of his family and estate. It's made by Deep Fusion Films, and the podcast is believed to be the first to be entirely presented by an AI host. Whether that's the case or not, it's certainly the first to be entirely presented by a celebrity deceased AI host. Deep Fusion Films, I did mention last week, they're involved with the production of the Hammer documentary, which aired last night on Sky Arts, and which should be more widely available as the year progresses. Mike Parkinson, as you may have guessed from my description, is the son of Sir Michael, and he says, "We're going for a new generation of guest talent, but that doesn't mean he would not go back again to people he interviewed before. Doing this now, trying something so new, we feel a bit like he must have felt back in 1971 when his show started." I mean, yes, there is the backing of the family. His son is involved. But AI Parkinson, is that really something that we want? Do we want AI representations of deceased celebrities chatting away to living celebrities? I mean, that in itself is slightly unnerving. You've also got the fact that this clearly has uses far beyond just Michael Parkinson. And I mean, an AI representation of a dead person's voice talking to a living person, that's one thing. What about when the dead start talking to the dead, essentially? Michael Parkinson chatting with Bowie or Eric Morecambe, or again, person that the real Michael Parkinson interviewed back in the 1970s, Rod Hull, an emu, Lauren Bacall, any of these people, Orson Welles. This is, I feel that whilst this is an interesting application for generative AI and AI voice cloning, which is something that I've got a bit of interest in the voice cloning side of things. I've done a few experiments with this in the past. I've written about it for various publications. This is a new stage of this, which is a little bit... Well, I said it puts me ill at ease earlier on. I'm a tiny bit grossed out by it, if I'm honest. I don't like it. So we'll see how that turns out anyway. The whole... I mean, you say, oh, well, it's just his voice. But there's more to it than that, because there's an artificial intelligence relying on a large language model, basically a database of... there's the voice element of it and those various nuances and tics and accents and tone and timbre, but there's also like the phrases, and it's not just like pulling out stock phrases, you know, this is a large language model, a database of words and how they will be used by a particular person. Now, this is reported in The Guardian a few days ago. Online, but it was actually in The Observer. It was published, and I'm just going to read this paragraph to you. Unexpectedly, the famous interviewer is also available to attest to the accuracy of his AI incarnation. I have always held The Observer in high regard, he told readers of this paper this weekend in an unmistakable South Yorkshire burb, before claiming to be eager to read the article. I don't want to get all kind of apocalyptic about this, but... it is a resurrection of the deceased in digital form. So, yeah, and that's not creepy at all, but, you know, it's Halloween week, so what are you going to do? Now, following the announcement of this, Mike Parkinson spoke to BBC Radio 4's Today to make it clear to listeners that it was an AI iteration of Sir Michael Parkinson. And... Mike Parkinson told the BBC, before he died, my father and I talked about doing a podcast, and unfortunately he passed away before it came true, which is where Deep Fusion came in. I said to them, if we wanted to do this podcast with my father talking about his archive, is it possible? And they said, it's more than possible. We think we can do something more. They go on to say that the AI, Michael, is not replacing a presenter. It is a new podcast where Sir Michael's legacy has continued, so it's not taking away a presenter's job. I don't really think that is the concern. With this, the concern is that it's just a little bit on the creepy side. Could it serve to devalue an archive of interviews between a human, between two humans, by then kind of duplicating and replicating in a kind of an advanced photocopy kind of approach? There's a lot to dig through with this, and maybe it's something that James and I will talk about at some point in the future. So the podcast series Virtually Parkinson, I don't think there's a release date for it just yet, but keep an eye out for that on your usual podcast players, because I imagine it will have quite a bit of promotion there. I'll give you links in the show notes to the whole Virtually Parkinson thing, so I'll let you make your mind up on that yourself, and maybe tell us what you think about it. That'd be quite interesting to know. A collection of Sherlock Holmes films produced in the 1920s have been restored and shown at the Alexandra Palace Theatre in North London as part of the BFI London Film Festival. Now, there's around 45 films which were made in the early 1920s. Three of the films underwent restoration for the festival. Apparently there's been demand for these for years, Bryony Dixon told the BBC. These are silent movies, which would have been accompanied with a soundtrack when initially screened, and were produced by Stoll Pictures. And produced by Stoll Pictures, the company founded by Sir Oswald Stoll, better known today as a theatre owner. And they were made primarily at Cricklewood Studios, which, if you know your British movie stuff, a film studio which was located in Cricklewood. And if you're aware of some of the things that Peter Capaldi's done beyond Doctor Who, then you'll know of the Cricklewood great 2012 spoof documentary that he created for BBC Four, which I don't know if that's still available to see, but it was very good. Yeah, so these Sherlock Holmes films have been screened. There is A Scandal in Bohemia, The Golden Pince-Nez, and The Final Problem. I'm not doing accents. And these were screened to the score, as suggested earlier. This was a score specially composed by the Royal Academy of Music Soloist Ensemble. Oh, he does do accents. Conducted by Joanna McGregor. Yeah, so this is intriguing because it's Sherlock Holmes. It's old movies, silent movies. These ones featured Ellie Norwood as Holmes. And there's all the traditional elements there. The pipe, the violin, the smoking gown. And it'd be very interesting to see if these get a wider release. There's no news of that happening at this point. But there's a lot of films to get through from a collection of 45, clearly. If this does get a wider release, we'll hopefully be able to let you know. But it'd be interesting to see if these do get a place on Blu-ray along with their soundtracks. Winding back the clock a long time, as I have been recently, actually offline, I've been playing with some virtual website software in order to revive an old version of the old Casterbrus, where various articles, which I feel might be useful in the new incarnation of Casterbrus, these articles can be found. And I'm thinking to myself, well, no one can read them at the moment. It might be a good idea to actually sort of bring them, resurrect them, as it were. So, and one of the big things that, one of our most successful sort of article series back in the day was about missing episodes, Doctor Who missing episodes. Now, I have some Doctor Who missing episodes here, but there is a gap, a slash between Doctor Who and missing episodes, because it's not about Doctor Who missing episodes, but it's about missing episodes featuring a Doctor. A couple of days ago, Film is Fabulous and De Montfort University Cinema and Television History Research Centre announced recovery of two episodes of some missing Sylvester McCoy shows from the 1970s. These are shows called Work, Journey to Work, and Unemployment. The first was broadcast on the 1st of February 1978, the second on the 8th of February 1978. These were ATV-produced television series, 8 programmes about the concept of work and the act of work and how we work. These are educational shows starring Sylvester McCoy, who was in those days credited as Sylvester without the R, as he was on Vision On and other shows from the time. And these were discovered in the collection of a deceased private film collector. They have what's called vinegar syndrome, but can be cleaned and the content scanned and will be offered in digital format to the ITV archive for preservation purposes. So that's great, isn't it? Sylvester McCoy missing episodes. Whoever imagined there would be such a thing? I'll give you a link to the show notes for that and everything else I discuss, as I always tell you. Back with Film is Fabulous. I know I didn't know this. I would have shared this a lot sooner had I... It's kind of a charitable endeavour that relies on public contributions. And as such, Film is Fabulous has a GoFundMe page. I would encourage anyone who's interested in supporting the restoration or the discovery and restoration of old TV to check out their GoFundMe. And yes, there will be a link in the show notes. Just a bit of clarity on that. So there's a specific purpose to this campaign. Within the private film collection of the late David Moore is an episode of black and white television in urgent need of restoration. The print is the sole surviving copy of a programme missing from the archives. Sabre of London, 4-3, from the 11th of November 1959. This was a show that starred South African actor Donald Gray. It was made at Elstree Studios. This is a 30-minute episode and is among several that have been catalogued at De Montfort University in Leicester, and composes 3 35mm negatives and 3 matching 35mm optical soundtracks. Now, restoration work has already been scheduled and will entail film preparation, cleaning, 4K scanning, audio scanning of the soundtracks, and various upgrades and data transfer to hard drive, and has an estimated cost of £2,000. And there's various other expenses as well. The GoFundMe target is for £3,000, so anything that goes over that will be used to restore other films in similar manner. Not for any moment did I think it was done for, out of the goodness of anyone's heart, but I did think that maybe there was some kind of public funding, lottery money, whatever, supporting these endeavours. Clearly not. They do need the help of enthusiasts and fans. So please help Film is Fabulous to help restore that missing episode and their various other projects. I think it's very important to be aware of these things and to for us to be able to act upon them. Small amounts, large amounts, whatever you've got. If you've got a few quid spare, that's a good cause in the quest to make everything that still exists watchable. Part three of our Film is Fabulous section. They're participating in the Blackpool Film Collectors Convention on the 17th of November at the Grand Hotel in Blackpool. Now, I'm going to be honest, I didn't know this was a thing, and I'm slightly annoyed I can't get to it. This event is widely regarded as a premier event for film collectors in the UK and has been held in Blackpool since the mid-70s. Now, there's a film fair on the Sunday, which features dealers selling a range of 8, Super 8, 16mm and 35mm films, projectors, accessories and books. And there's even an auction. Now, the Films Fabulous people say that they're going to be there and will be selling a collection of 16 and 35mm films on behalf of the estates of two deceased private collectors. Some of the shows that will be on sale include The Adventures of Sir Lancelot, which we have a podcast about. Go and check that out. Buccaneers, the Des O'Connor Show, The Flight into Danger, Gideon's Way, a Norman Wisdom hosted Saturday night at the London Palladium. Torchy the Battery Boy and Wonder Boy and Tiger, those last two came from the private film collection of a Roberta Lee. There's also 35mm titles of Adventures of Robin Hood, Danger Man, Man in a Suitcase, Persuaders, Randall and Hopkirk Deceased, The Saint, Strange Report and Whiplash, and just highlight some of the great soundtracks, that theme tunes that were with those shows, all available to buy in original film format. If you want to learn more about the Blackpool Film Convention and what Film is Fabulous are doing there, I'm linking to that for you as well. Okay, last time we had a bit of music news over the past few episodes, and last time it was about Led Zeppelin. So is this one. You have my apologies. But Becoming Led Zeppelin, a feature-length documentary about the origins of Led Zeppelin, is getting a cinematic release in May 2025. A trailer for the movie was shown in a US cinema on October the 24th, a few days ago, ahead of a screening of the latest Venom movie. And it has also been updated on the Sony movie website, Sony Distributing, Sony Classic Pictures. So, yeah, this is a Led Zeppelin documentary that's getting a cinematic release. Journalist David Taylor reported on Twitter that Becoming the Led Zeppelin trailer announced that the film will be screened in IMAX, which has also been backed up by the Black Crowes singer Chris Robinson. I imagine that this is a documentary that features lots of well-known people telling us how great Led Zeppelin are and telling us a bit about the story, etc. I'm wondering if what's actually happened is that it's been re-edited, because it was premiered in Venice in 2021, which I recall now because Jimmy Page was at it and there was like a little bit of promotion at the time. So I'm going to suggest it's possibly being edited. It was criticised for being 2 hours and 17 minutes, which is possibly a bit long. And there was a mixed reception at that premiere. I think this has been re-edited and possibly more material added to it or whatever, and to be more cohesive and more compact and more, you know, 90 minutes is a good length for a documentary, really, isn't it? Peter Jackson gets away with it because he's Peter Jackson, and two, the source material for the Beatles Get Back was like from several weeks. So there's a slight, not everyone is the Beatles, not everyone is Peter Jackson. Becoming Led Zeppelin then looks like it's going to be happening in 2025. So that's great news certainly for me, and certainly for fans of classic rock music, 1960s music. And, you know, Led Zeppelin, hugely influential band. So, okay, so in a tweet, journalist David Taylor said that the trailer was an extended version of the teaser released in 2021, which adds footage of new interviews with the members of Led Zeppelin. Does look like they've tightened up the original edit, added new material, as I suggested they may have done. So brilliant. So that is Becoming Led Zeppelin, which now has a release date of sometime in 2025. Okay, so we've reached the end of another weekly edition of Casterbris. Now, I'll be honest, I'm a little bit late this week. It's half-term halls. My children do dance competitions. And I was a little bit distracted with the big news of our other podcast that went live a few days ago when James speaks to Tom Selinski. So please check that out if you haven't already. And James sounded genuinely pleased to be able to talk about something that wasn't Doctor Who. It was nice, or Star Trek, or any of it, because we've never spoken about Red Dwarf on Casterbris. Not just the podcast, but I don't think we've ever spoken about Red Dwarf on the Casterbris site. So, in any of its incarnations. So, we're still finding new ground. And I think, really, if it is new ground and being original and just doing something new, which keeps things interesting, then I just want to quickly go through the topics that we've briefly reported on Casterbris in the past few weeks, both on the podcast and on the website. We've got the new Sergio Leone book by Christopher Frayling, which he's already a biographer of Leone, and the visionary Italian director is portrayed in a slightly different light here because it's in his own words from his own documents and articles that he wrote, mostly not in English, so a lot of these have been translated for the first time. There's information about the Hammer documentary, as I mentioned, that went out on Sky Arts last night. There's more detail into the opening of the Box of Delights new edition. There's information about the Beatles 64, the Scorsese documentary. There's the Play School episode rediscovered. There's the Wallace and Gromit collection coming to 4K and Blu-ray, and later on there's going to be information about the new Wallace and Gromit film and the trailer. And do you know what? This is really, I feel as though I found a new way to make this site interesting again. Rather than it just being an archive of these podcasts, there is something there. There's something interesting, classic and classic themed media at the moment. As kind of, it transcends, I think, nostalgia. And he's more, because see, that's very a kind of a rose-tinted kind of thing, isn't it? And we're more in the realm, I think, certainly in terms of anything pre-2000, I think we're in the realms of appreciation and revisitation and reinterpretation. And not necessarily in a bad way when I say reinterpretation, but, you know, sort of like finding new ways of understanding things rather than putting your own spin on things. So, yeah, that really seems to be this whole kind of classic TV, classic audio, books about those things, seems to be this kind of path that I'm following with Casterbris.co.uk. And that is reflected in these weekly podcasts and to a small extent with the special edition podcasts as well. Speaking of which, I have one of those in production for later this month, probably going out around the 14th, 15th, sort of the middle of November, ahead of the Box of Delights 40th anniversary edition. I'll be chatting with Chris Chapman, which was a very enjoyable chat. I really enjoyed it, and it was nice to talk to him. I'll be back with another weekly edition with the latest release news and classic TV news and missing episode news and restoration news and maybe some music news as well next week. Until then, it's goodbye from me.